Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can stream live through the website or visit public affairs programming for podcast of prior shows. You just scroll down and look for the shows that are of interest to you. I just want to, you know, throw something out there. It's interesting because we had a number of calls today asking, you know, oh my gosh, the market's down. What do you think? Are you, you know, where do you think the market's going to go? And do we need to be worried? And, you know, 6 weeks ago, I just looked at one of my outlines from March 31st, and the Dow was 32,981. It's now 33,587. The NASDAQ was 13,246 and now 13,031. And the S&P was 3972 and now 4,063. And we were excited March 31st because the market was, well, the Dow was, you know, slightly down, but the NASDAQ and the S&P were up. So, folks, that is the nature of the market, up and down. That's how it works. And over time is what you're looking for. Diversification, very important. Our topic tonight, though, is employer retirement plans and other benefits, a little bit of benefits around employer retirement plans. I meant to talk about this several weeks ago, and we didn't get any further than IRAs and Roth IRAs, so I thought I'll talk a little bit about some 401k information this evening and things that pertain to that. We are live. If you have questions, you can call in. Lori C. is in the studio. She'll answer the calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Before we get totally into it, we have just a few days left of tax filing season. Monday, May 17th is the due date. If you have not already filed your return, you either need to jump on that right away or get your return extended. Extensions are very simple for the most part. If you don't owe, they're for sure really easy, and it's a Form 4868. If you owe, you need to make a payment with your extension. The extension is a time to file, not an extension of time to pay. So you want to make sure you, if you do owe or think you owe, to make a payment with that extension. So you have till May 17th, Monday, to do that, to either get the return filed or get it extended. Some people will think, oh gosh, I owe and I don't have any money to pay, so I'm just not going to file it yet. Well, there are late filing penalties and there are late payment penalties. So even if you don't have the money to, if you owe and you don't have the money to pay, at least file for the extension and pay what you can. If you think you're going to owe $1,000 and you have $100, pay something with your extension. So again, it's not an extension of time to pay, extension of time to file. And if you don't do that extension for the filing, then you could have penalties for late filing. And those can add up quite a bit. All right. So if you have questions about that, you can certainly give me a call again at 610-758-8810. But thought we would kind of try to circle back to the discussion on retirement plans. So I do want to discuss employer retirement plans, specifically 401ks, And I lump into that 403Bs as well. 403Bs are typically with nonprofits, you know, universities, hospital systems, things like that. So basically, they, you know, over the years, especially with the Pension Protection Act, they really brought 403Bs much in alignment with 401Ks. So when I'm talking tonight, it's pretty much going to be more geared toward the 401K, but that includes the 403Bs. And hopefully talk a little bit about some of the other employer benefits, such as ESOPs, which we don't see as much anymore, but I'll talk about what that is, employer stock ownership plan, ESPP plans, which is employee stock purchase plans, and RSUs, which is restricted stock units. Some people might not have any of these. Some people might have some of these. Some people might have all of them. So we will discuss those. First, the basics on 401ks, and you know, this is a lot of information from the IRS, the IRS's website. It's just all general knowledge. I would be saying the same thing, but I love government websites because there's been a lot of research, and it's all there for you, and you can read it. It's not always understandable, but it is available, and it's really helpful to a lot of people. With a 401k plan, employees can choose to defer some of their salary instead of receiving that amount in their paycheck. The employee defers or delays getting that money. In this case, their deferred money is going into a 401k plan sponsored by their employer. The deferred money generally is not taxed until it is distributed. And if you establish a 401k plan, you can have other retirement plans, which I will talk about, and employers have to file a Form 5500. You can make a 401k more simple or complex. This is from an employer standpoint. Depending on what kind of 401k an employer might set up, there are different testing rules. Depending on what kind of 401k plan you have, they want to make sure that you're not discriminating against maybe lower paid employees. So there are certain testing requirements. There are ways for employers to get out of those testing requirements, so to speak. For example, if they have something called a safe harbor 401k, and a safe harbor 401k basically has the employer making an automatic contribution to the 401k, whether or not the employee makes that. So, for example, it could be have a 3% safe harbor plan. If the employer is putting 3% in for everyone across the board, that's considered a safe harbor plan, and there's a lot less testing. So the administrative expenses for a 401k are much less. I just wanted to kind of mention that if there are listeners in the audience who might have small businesses, you may be able to set up a 401k easier than you think. And there are IRS prototype plans that make it a lot easier for people to be able to have a retirement plan for their employees. There are also single member 401ks or solo 401ks, I like to call them, that if you're self-employed, these are really great. Some people don't realize that. They don't know about it. Maybe no one mentions it to them. A lot of folks who might self-prepare their tax returns might not be getting that extra advice. So if you are self-employed and just think you have an IRA available to you, that is not the case. You could have a solo 401k, set up your own retirement plan. And the reason a solo 401k could be attractive to a self-employed person would be because you can contribute a lot more to it than you can to a regular IRA. The IRA has much lower limits of how much you can contribute, whereas the solo 401k, it's really a lot more. So if you have a lot of income, something you might want to explore getting. Folks, we're at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets, on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
On the next Lehigh Valley Discourse, Alan Jennings hosts WDIY's Bethlehem Democratic Mayoral Forum featuring J. William Reynolds and Dana Grubb as both candidates discuss affordable housing, race and inclusion, business development, and the future quality of life for the residents of Bethlehem. Listen Thursday between 6 and 7 p.m. here on WDIY 88.1 or stream on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about employer retirement plans and some other employer benefits. And initially, just talking about some of the basics with 401ks. So I had mentioned that 401k is basically a way to save money in a retirement plan from your salary. We talked about the employee deferring or delaying getting part of their salary. Okay, so let me just talk about 401ks in general. It is an incentive for employees to put money into a retirement plan if they don't have to pay taxes on that money today. Back in the day, we always talked about defer. You defer paying taxes as long as you can, and then that way the money that you're not using to pay taxes is actually growing as an investment in your account. But we have to kind of step back and think about, is that always good logic? It might not apply to everyone, so you really need to talk to someone about the circumstances that apply to you. Back when I first started, you know, a long, long time ago, I recall at one point Social Security wasn't taxable, and then some of the rules changed, and then some of the Social Security was taxable, and then a little bit more of the Social Security became taxable, all depending on how much other income you have on your return. So it's like a circular calculation. There are people who get pensions. There are people who then save in their retirement accounts. What ends up happening is now we might have a retiree who could have quite a bit of income in their retirement. So the idea of deferring paying taxes today makes sense if we think we're in a higher bracket today than we're going to be in our future, in our retirement years. I have seen situations where someone retires and they're actually paying more taxes in their retirement years than they were when they were working because they deferred everything. And now, every time they want money, it's all in tax-deferred IRA accounts. So we have to be careful about this kind of presumption that deferral is always better. You know, there's all different kinds of calculations you can run to kind of make that case one way or the other. So the idea is, originally, when 401ks were set up, you would put money from your paycheck into the retirement account, and then you don't pay tax on that. And depending on what state you live in, that may be the case for the state as well. For Pennsylvania residents, we don't actually get that deferral today. So if I make $100,000 and I put $20,000 into my 401k, my federal wages are $80,000. But my Pennsylvania wages, in my very simple story, would be $100,000. I don't get the deferral. But what is the difference with Pennsylvania? Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement accounts, you know, when you eventually take them out when you're of age. So that's why they don't give us the deferral up front. It's because they're not taxing us on it when it comes out. For people who maybe are in a very low tax bracket today, and I've mentioned this on many shows, especially for young people who are just starting out, you're probably at the lowest tax bracket you may be in a very long time, because hopefully over your career you continue to work, make more money, get promotions, get salary increases, and, you know, maybe get married, have a spouse. Now you're double income and you could be in a higher tax bracket in future years. So there are situations where someone might be in a low tax bracket today and they don't need the tax deferral. If the 401k offered by the employer is only on a tax deferral basis, the pre-tax dollars, And the employer offers a match. As I mentioned, sometimes employers will offer 3% contribution automatically, and some will only put the employer portion in if they're matching what you pay or put in to some extent. So some employers might say if you put in 6% of your paycheck into the retirement plan, they'll put in 3%. That's free money. So if you only have a pre-tax option, then you usually want to do that to get the free money. But more and more employers are also offering a Roth feature in their 401k. We call it a designated Roth. For those people who don't need that tax deferral, you could put it in with after-tax dollars, meaning back to my example of $100,000, if I want to put $20,000 into a Roth 401k, my federal wages are $100,000, my Pennsylvania wages are $100,000, but I took home a lot less money because I threw it into my Roth. Now, the employer match in those cases is going into a taxable portion of that 401k, so the employer match or the employer safe harbor contribution is always going to be regular ordinary income when it comes out of your 401k. But if you're using the Roth feature, the Roth will go in, as I mentioned, on an after-tax basis, and the growth on your Roth will be after-tax as well. But even in the Roth, the employer portion will come out as eventually ordinary income. That is taxable. So you want to think about it. The traditional way of thinking of the 401k, tax deferral, great, great option, especially for those people who are in higher tax brackets. For people who are in lower tax brackets, either at the start of their career or maybe even at the end of their career when they start. I have a number of clients who go part-time at the end. You know, they have employers who are willing to keep them on, go part-time. If you are still able to participate in the 401k, if you have a Roth feature, you can certainly explore whether it makes sense for you to do it on an after-tax basis to that Roth 401k or what we call the designated Roth. So understand the deferrals. Now, we also have limits, though, on how much we can do. And there's a couple different limits that we have to pay attention to. So there's an employee limit, and then there's also an employer limit. And the employee limit, which, depending on what kind of retirement plan you have, there's different limits. So different limits for simple IRAs, SARSEP IRAs, traditional IRAs. I'm talking about 401ks right now, 401ks and 403bs. So for people who are under age 50 for 2021, the employee deferral is $19,500. $19,500. And for people who are over age 50, you can do an additional contribution of $6,500, which brings us to a total of $26,000 for 2021. You have to have, obviously, that much in wages. And of course, you have to have enough to pay the other, you know, taxes that you might owe for Medicare and Social Security and things like that. So your employer may have a limit on how much you can contribute. There are, from time to time, certain employer plans that may have other limits where they won't let you put in those IRS maximum amounts if they have testing limits. So if, you know, sometimes we see this like in medical practices or healthcare systems where there are a lot of highly compensated employees, and to make it kind of fair and non-discrimination, they have to limit maybe the higher compensated people from maxing out their contribution. So occasionally we see that, not very often, but occasionally. And sometimes you might have already made the full, you know, contribution, and you'll get a letter from your employer saying, hey, you don't get to contribute that whole amount. You've got to take some back out. And it's imperative, if you get that kind of letter, that you do indeed withdraw that amount, you know, right away to make sure that you're in compliance with the plan. Folks, we are talking about employer retirement plans tonight with a little bit. We're going to talk about some other benefits related to those. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking on air, you can talk off air to Lori, and she'll write the question down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available streaming live at WDIY.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there, as well as on the Your Financial Choices website at yourfinancialchoices.com. Questions are also can be submitted through that website as well. I don't have as many people taking advantage of that. I've always been a little surprised. I do get questions from time to time, but not as often as I would expect. Just want to let everyone know that I don't hunt you down or even chase you down, or I just answer your question. That's it. There's no other gimmick there. So just letting you know, if you have questions, you're welcome to send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. And podcast of prior shows are also available there. We are talking tonight about employer retirement plans and some other benefits. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in if you're not comfortable talking live on air. So the 401ks, we've talked about the nature of them, that typically it's pre-tax dollars. You're getting a tax deferral for the amount of money that you're putting in from your salary into the 401k. But there are some employers who offer the Roth feature, which is the Roth 401k or the designated Roth. And those are after-tax dollars. You don't get the tax deduction today, but the Roth money as it grows is all going to be income tax-free when it comes out to you eventually when you retire or roll it over. So we talked about the amount that an employee can put in, which is $19,500 for 2021, and that's whether it's the Roth or the for the regular pre-tax one. And if you're 50 years old or over, you can do an additional $6,500. Now, here's the thing that some people might not realize you can do. You can do a little bit of both. If you have a Roth feature in your 401k at work, you can do a little bit of both. You just can't do more than the total. So let's pretend you're 50 or older and you want to get started on this. That's $26,000. And if you have the cash flow and the means to be able to divert $26,000, you could maybe $10,000 to the Roth 401k and do $16,000 to the pre-tax portion. You could do any allocation that you want, typically. When I'm looking at tax planning for someone, occasionally, you have people who may be eligible for an American Opportunity tax credit when their kids are in college, and they may qualify for some education credits. But if they're over a certain threshold, they may not qualify for it. And just by virtue of them putting more money into their 401k or putting it in on the pre-tax basis, it could lower their income enough to help them qualify for that American Opportunity credit. That's just an example. That's where we would want to visit and look at how much are you putting into a 401k on a pre-tax basis. Are you always on the cusp of just getting that next tax benefit that maybe it might make sense for you to visit your contribution to your 401k? Some people might not have as much of income, but maybe they have some investments, and those investments might have qualified dividends that qualify for a lower tax rate, or capital gains. Maybe they have stock that they sell from time to time and they have long-term capital gains. Long-term capital gains and qualified dividends qualify for a lower tax rate if you're in a lower tax bracket. And maybe by deferring some of your income, you could be in that lower bracket and get some tax at 0%. So you want to think about what you're doing with your deferrals. We have a question. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. How can I help you?
I wanted to clarify something I came in on. You were talking earlier. It's about the amount that you can contribute to your, I have a 403B.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it doesn't matter if it's a 401K or a 403B. It was the amount that you can contribute.
Right.
I am over 60, but I'm not retired yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking I want to up my amount that I am contributing.
Okay.
So is it just depends on your age, or is it a percent of your income? Like, how do they arrive at that? Those figures.
Yeah, it's determined by the IRS has rules under Internal Revenue Code Section 401. So under 401, there's all kinds of rules for 401Ks, 401As, and then there's also 403B. So back in the day, there were different rules for 403Bs and 401Ks. The Pension Protection Act kind of brought them more in alignment. So the employee contribution for a 401K or a 403B is $19,500. The catch-up contribution, if you're 50 or older, is $6,500. That brings it to a total of $26,000. And that's across, you know, any number of 401K or 403B plans someone might have. So someone could actually work at two places. You can't contribute more than that across all of your 401Ks or 403Bs. So you could work one place and have a 403B and work, you know, night shift at a grocery store and have a 401K. That 19.5 and 6,500 apply across all of them.
Okay, but that's per person. Like if you're married filing jointly, it's going to be that amount for each person.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Good point,
all
Carolyn.
Right.
Yep, good point.
Okay. I'm glad I clarified that. Thank you so
okay.
much.
Okay. And Carolyn, can I just point out, though, that's another good point that you just made, because 401Ks have different rules than IRAs. So now that you're saying that, if you don't mind, I'm just going to tag on to that. This is why I love when people call in with questions, and you're brilliant with your questions. So 401Ks, it is separate. It's per person. But IRAs, you can have one spouse who's working and you can have a non-working spouse. And if you're eligible to do IRAs, and depending on how much income is on the tax return, I won't get into all the numbers because it can sound overwhelming, but you can have one working spouse and a non-working spouse. And based on the working spouse's wages, a non-working spouse can put money into an IRA or a Roth IRA, very different than the 401k. So I'm glad you actually asked that, because it really brings to light the potential for a non-working spouse to actually be able to have a retirement account, but based on the working spouse's wages. Okay, so thank you for bringing that up. I think it was a good point.
Hey, terrific. I would bet anything that helped somebody out there.
I hope so. Okay, Carolyn, have a good night.
Too.
It's gorgeous.
Thank
out.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. This is why I do love questions, because first of all, questions can challenge me and help raise awareness for me of what people are interested in and what people need to understand and know. It gives me ideas for future radio shows. I've been doing this since 2007. I've been at WDIY since 2009, and we are in 2021. It's a weekly radio show, and other than sometimes taking some breaks, that's a lot of ideas. It's a lot of things to talk about. So I really appreciate when people call in with questions and ideas. I'm always looking for topics to talk about. So Carolyn, thanks. You always have such great questions. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me like Carolyn did. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Sean DeGray. It is 6:30 and 65 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight is going to be mostly clear, 41. Thursday, it's going to be sunny, high 70. Thursday night, low around 45. Friday is going to be sunny, slight chances of showers, high 73. Friday night, low around 48. And Saturday, we got more rain, high 75. And Saturday night, 49. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Folks, we are talking about employer retirement plans tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. If you don't want to talk live on air, if you don't mind talking, she'll put you through and you can ask me directly. We can talk directly. So we talked a little bit about 401ks. We talked about that this is an employer retirement plan. Could be 403b2, as Carolyn mentioned, 401ks, 403bs. Very similar. So I will be using the word 401k, but basically includes similar provisions as the 403b. We've talked about how much an employee can defer, that it can be pre-tax. Typically, salary deferral to get the tax savings today could be Roth after-tax contributions, meaning you're not getting the deduction on your W-2 today, but you're growing it income tax-free for the future under qualified distribution in your future when you're retired, and that is not tax-deferred. But the limits overall, $19,500 for the employee contribution, $6,500 additional if you're 50 or older, for a total of $26,000. Employers also have a limit. So I mentioned that sometimes the employer can put in a matching contribution, and I would say this is probably more relevant, I would say, you know, for highly compensated people, but also for the solo 401ks that we work with. There are overall limits, and that is including the employee portion. It can't be more than $57,000 with the employer piece, and $63,500 with the catch-up. So that's the overall total. Where this really would come into play quite often would be where we might have a self-employed person who makes, you know, $300,000. There's the employee portion, and then there's an employer portion, but it can't exceed those amounts. I want to go back to, for a moment, also talking about if we have more than one employer, or when would that happen? Sometimes people work for two jobs, but when else might it happen? It could happen when you're changing jobs. If you've changed jobs mid-year and you're someone who likes to maximize your 401k, or maybe you maxed out in September and you switch to another employer in October and you're making great money and you think, I want to max my 401k before the end of the year because I have this new 401k now with nothing in it. Those deferrals apply across all 401ks for the year. But here's the little pickle people get into. All of a sudden, I'm doing a tax return and I'm looking at code D as in David on the W-2, or I think Roths are code AA. And that tells me, if I look at those and it exceeds, in the example of someone who's 50 or older, it exceeds $26,000. I know we have a problem. We have an excess contribution problem, and it has to get fixed ASAP. Normally, in a normal tax year, that fix has to be done by the tax filing date of April 15th. So if you find that you have an excess deferral, you have to, take out the excess deferral by tax filing time and make sure you include that in income. So in my example of $100,000, I said I put $20,000 into my 401k. I got another job on the side making, you know, $40,000, and I put 10 of it into my 401k. So in my story, I have $20,000 from my one job and $10,000 from my second job. That totals $30,000. I have an excess contribution of $4,000 because I'm over 50. What am I going to do? I have to go back to one of those employer plans and pull it out. If I'm working for both places, I would, you know, go to the more flexible employer and say, hey, listen, I over-contributed. You got to pull four out. Boy, you're going to be in trouble if they don't know you're working at another job. But what generally happens, where I usually see this, is when someone has changed jobs. And then what I do is, if you've already left the other employer in September, I'm now at the new employer and I've over-contributed and we're, you know, 6 months into this job, it's March, I'm doing my tax return, and I realize for the prior year I put too much in, $4,000. I will go to my new employer and say, hey, I just found out for 2020 I put too much in. I need to pull $4,000 out. And I've never had anybody have a problem. But in my story then, my wages, my federal taxable wages, 100 less 20 was 80. My W-2 for my other job was 40 less 10, which is 30. So I would be reporting wages of 110. But that's wrong because I over-contributed four. We're going to pull that out. So guess what? I have to add $4,000 of that excess contribution back onto my tax return. I now have federal wages of 114. You need to get that fixed. Because guess what happens if you don't? You don't get that tax deferral. You pay taxes on it. And some people think, oh, I might not, you know, I'm not going to worry about it. I have now basis in my 401k. You get basis in Roths, you don't, or IRAs. In IRAs, you don't get a basis in the 401k in this case for this reason. In the old days, people had something called after-tax contributions pre-1986, and occasionally you still have some people doing after-tax contributions, which would give you basis. Excess contributions don't give you basis, okay? So you want to make sure you take care of that because you don't want to pay tax on it twice. Excess deferrals. So that was what we call excess deferrals. That's how you can kind of get it, you know, cleaned up and fixed up. And generally, if you notify your employer before the tax filing date, they can do that. Even so, I will include the income on the tax return for the client, make sure they get that out ASAP. All right, what else can we talk about as far as 401ks? I wanted to say something else, and it just skipped my mind. Hopefully, it'll come back to me. Well, some other things to pay attention to for 401ks would be what is in your 401k. You generally will have a menu of investment options that an employer provides to you for the 401k. If they have it at, you know, one of the bigger custodians, maybe there's, you know, some type of third-party administrator who manages the 401k, and they may have a website for you. But usually, generally, an employer will have a set menu of investment options that they have taken the time to select that provides adequate diversification under, you know, certain rules to give employees the opportunity to invest the money the way they choose with adequate options, you know, mid-cap, small-cap, large-cap, bonds, whatever it might be, kind of to give you some diversification. But it's a limited menu. Sometimes it might be 20 options. It could be mutual funds, and then with target date funds. So you might have 20 mutual funds you could choose from, and then with different asset classes, and then maybe for the people who don't want to pick particular investments, they don't feel they're sophisticated enough or don't want to bother with it, there are something called target date funds, and quite often that will be also an option in many 401ks these days to kind of relieve the participant from the burden of having to, you know, allocate the account themselves and rebalance and all of that, because the target date fund rebalances itself automatically based on that target date of retirement. So if I think I'm going to retire in 2030, I could go for a target date fund, a 2030 target date fund. And as I get closer to 2030, that fund starts to get more and more conservative, because the concept is that as you get ready to retire, you become more conservative. That's the general approach. If you're someone who's more aggressive and you don't want to bother with it, you could always pick a target date fund of 2050, even if you think you're going to retire in 2030. That kind of concept. You understand? I'm not making that recommendation. I'm just saying you could kind of work around the investment options that are available. But they're typically pretty limited. Some mutual funds maybe maybe some target date funds. All right. There is sometimes offered something called a self-directed brokerage account. A self-directed brokerage account, or they sometimes call it like a brokerage window. And what some employers provide then for people is an opportunity for them to kind of carve out some of the money that they have in that 401k into this self-directed brokerage account, whereby you can select some of your own investments. And that then puts some of that burden on you for choosing the investment options. It basically kind of opens up the whole universe of, you know, that you might have even on an individual basis on a brokerage account. So if you have that option, that is always something that you could explore. And usually it is with some of the leading custodians like Fidelity or Schwab, and usually for the bigger companies. But I think I have read that in recent years, a lot more employers offer those, but a lot of the employees don't take advantage of it because the employees don't understand it. They don't know what it is. There is a little bit more of risk, I would say, on the participants' side, and some might argue that there's a little bit of risk on the employer's side for providing that option, but it is optional generally. So I would say if you have a participant who has this available to them and they decide to explore it, to have this self-directed brokerage account or this brokerage window, and they go and, you know, choose from this universe of investment options, you know, they're really taking on more of that risk. So a lot more employers are offering it. Not as many employees take advantage of it, but we might start seeing that, you know, more and more. I would say too that, you know, probably 10 years ago, I'm thinking, we never saw really that many target date funds. And now we see lots of target date funds, and I see a lot more people taking advantage of target date funds. So there are probably instances where employees who are participating in a 401k have gone both directions. You know, here's the menu of options that the employer gives you with all these different asset classes, and they don't want to bother with it. So all of a sudden we have a simple set it and forget it target date fund. And then you have people who really want to play more than that menu of options that an employer gives. So they want to go the self-directed brokerage route. Or that brokerage window. Again, you know, they probably have access to a lot more. It's not the employer portion, though. It would only be the employee portion. And I think typically they might limit you on how much you can put into the brokerage link. It probably depends on which employer, how much. And, you know, you have to work with your employer to know what if that would be available and what you could do with that. Now, some people also don't realize that you may have a 401k at work, but you may also be entitled to having an IRA outside of that. There are limits, income limits. If you are a participant in an employer-sponsored plan, then you may not be eligible to do a traditional IRA. It depends on how much income you make. But if you have a non-working spouse, as I mentioned earlier, who maybe wants to put away some money for retirement and you work, then the phase-out ranges for the eligibility for that non-working spouse to put money in an IRA are much, much higher. So, for example, if you're married and you're both working and you both have employer plans, for you to be able to put money into a traditional IRA, if you make under $104,000, you still could do that. If it's over $124,000, you can't. The rest is a phase-out range. But if you have a married taxpayer, then the threshold for married filing joint for the non-working spouse, the phase out is between 196 and 206. So you can make much more money and still have a non-working spouse fund an IRA. When we get back, I'll try to wrap up my talk about 401ks and talk about some of the other benefits. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We're talking about employer retirement plans. I've talked a bit about 401ks, employee portion, employer portion, doing a pre-tax contribution, designated Roth function, employer match, employer safe harbor contribution, excess deferrals, coordinating your maximum amount that you can put in, make sure if you have an excess contribution, you get it out by the tax filing due date. Just a number of things to know about 401ks that you can still, in some circumstances, depending on your income, still have an IRA, a deductible IRA. And you may just not need the deductible IRA, maybe want to do a Roth IRA. The thresholds for having a Roth IRA, even if you have an employer plan at work. So I have people who completely max out their 401k at work and still want to do Roth IRAs. You can do that. If it's married filing joint, the phase out is 196 to 206. $196,000 to $206,000. So if you make less than that, if you're married filing joint, you can fund Roth IRAs. And if you're single, it's $124,000 to $139,000. So much higher thresholds for the Roth IRA than for the traditional IRA. But you could still do those if you're under. If you're over those thresholds, then you're not eligible to do the deductible IRA. You might not be eligible to do the Roth IRA. You can always do something called the non-deductible IRA. This is something I probably had in the past, many, many years ago, only saw two clients use the non-deductible IRA, meaning you're not going to get a deduction. And people would think, well, why would you do it? Well, they were still going after the tax deferral. So if they did a non-deductible IRA, they were getting basis in their IRA, meaning when they take it out, they've already paid tax on part of that. So when they eventually take that out pro rata, it won't be taxable. But they were doing it for the deferral so that when they put that money in and it started earning money in that IRA, that was all tax deferred. Whereas if they took that same $6,000 and put it into a brokerage account and earned interest or dividends on it or capital gains, it would be income taxed, you know, currently. Whereas when they put it into the non-deductible IRA, they were deferring the taxation on the income. I have an issue with putting too much money in IRAs because it all comes out as ordinary income. Whereas if you put it in a brokerage account, it is entitled to some tax favored treatment if you have qualified dividends or long-term capital gains. Really good tax treatment. So, you know, you want to make sure you're weighing that. But where they have really come in vogue now is by putting money in a non-deductible IRA, you have basis in it. And if it's the only IRA you have, and let's pretend you're over 50 and you could put $7,000 into an IRA for 2020 up until May 17th. You could put it into the IRA if your income is over the threshold, the high thresholds, remember I mentioned. So if you're working, if you put it into an IRA and it's non-deductible, I have basis in that IRA. If it's my only IRA and I convert it to a Roth, so I take my $7,000 out of my IRA distribution, I have basis of $7,000 because I didn't get a deduction for it. Remember, it was non-deductible. Now I've put it into a Roth. I don't pay any tax on it. And that was one way to get money into a Roth. It was called a backdoor Roth IRA for those people who make too much money to qualify for the Roth. Someone got fancy and found out they could do this. And when they had done some recent updates in the SECURE Act, they actually referenced the backdoor Roth. So I feel comfortable talking about it now. Before, I would not talk about it because I felt like this was a loophole. The IRS was going to close it, and they never did. So it is called the backdoor Roth IRA. It doesn't really work very well for people who already have substantial IRAs. So if you have $100,000 in an IRA and you say, well, now I can do this non-deductible IRA, I'll put $6,000 in, I got basis $6,000, I'll just keep that in a separate account and, you know, convert it over. Well, the IRS looks at your IRAs all as one. So even if you have it in a separate account, the basis is really $6,000 over $106,000 in my story. So it's not as easy as that. So you would be paying tax on, you know, quite a bit of that because your basis in it is just a smidgen in the whole pot. So it really works well for people who don't have other IRAs. All right, got that. What else do we have to watch out for 401ks? You have to watch out if there's any employer stock in a 401k. We have some big corporations in our neighborhood here in Pennsylvania. We have PPL, we have Air Products. There are companies that will match their employees' contributions with company stock. So a lot of 401ks of big corporations might have company stock. The company keeps track of the cost basis of that stock as they put it in. If someone has a really long career at one of these companies, they might have very low cost basis for that employer stock. It's in the 401k. If you now retire, someone might tell you, hey, roll that over to the IRA. Well, stop. You want to think first because there is special tax treatment for employer stock in a 401k. And that special tax treatment is if you take the employer stock out of the plan, you only pay tax on the cost basis of it. And if you then sell it the next day, the gain on the difference between the cost basis and the fair market value is all long-term capital gain. Now, if you continue to hold it a little longer, any appreciation after that is short-term for the first year and then becomes long-term, but it's only on the amount over that fair market value. It's determined when you take the employer stock out. So some people, when you retire, you want to be careful. If you have employer stock, you ask your custodian if it's not on your statement, what is the cost basis of my employer stock? Make sure you understand what your options are. You have to be very careful. It's called NUA, net unrealized appreciation. It has to be done in a lump sum distribution. So basically, if I have a 401k with $300,000 in it and $50,000 is employer stock, that's $300,000 less my $50,000 of employer stock, but my employer stock has a cost basis of $10,000. What I have to do, the lump sum distribution, would be $250,000 of the non-employer stock would go into my rollover IRA, and the $50,000 of employer stock can go out to my brokerage account, now in my name alone or joint with my spouse. Now I have $50,000 of employer stock sitting over there with a cost basis of $10,000. I pay tax on the $10,000. I pay ordinary income tax on the $10,000. I'm assuming your retirement age, there's no 10% penalty on early withdrawal, but basically it has to be in a lump sum, but that lump sum is split. So the employer stock goes one direction and the non-employer stock goes into an IRA rollover. Now, if I sell that employer stock immediately, I have $40,000 of long-term capital gains. Long-term capital gains are taxed at favored tax rates. And that's the beauty of NUA, net unrealized appreciation. So I mentioned employer stock could be in a 401k. It could just be part of your 401k. Some companies have a separate vessel for this, and they call it an ESOP, an employer stock ownership plan. And the employer stock ownership plan, it's the same concept. It's a qualified plan eligible for rollover, but typically it is nice because the ESOPs are already segregated with the employer stock. It's not part of the 401k, and you have to remember it's literally a separate plan. And in a rollover, a lump sum rollover, you can just lump sum the ESOP because it's its own account. So that's kind of nice when it's separated like that. You have a little bit more options, but the same concept applies. Recall that you heard we mentioned rollover. So your 401k often people can leave it at their former employer if they love all their investment options and they have low cost and maybe, you know, they're happy as a clam and they can use the system. You can leave your 401k quite often at a former employer. Sometimes if it's too small, they want you to leave because it's administratively burdensome for them. So they may encourage you to move off the platform. But generally, people quite often will kind of want to direct their investments themselves after they've retired. Quite often, those investment options are limited, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and you have, you know, much broader diversification and options, you know, on another platform, so they will roll it over. But you can sometimes leave it at your former employer or roll it over. And the reason sometimes you'll see the difference in language of an IRA rollover versus just an IRA. An IRA might be that traditional IRA where you were taking a deduction on your tax return. That distinguishes it from the IRA rollover, which tells us it came from a 401k, and it may retain some of those ERISA benefits for creditor protection on a rollover 401k. Certain states have different, credit protection for IRAs versus qualified plans like 401ks. And if you have it in a rollover, sometimes it will retain those protections. An employee stock purchase plan is very different than an ESOP, different than employer stock and a 401k. An employee stock purchase plan, and people mix these words up quite often, an employee stock purchase plan is a plan that an employer provides employees an opportunity to buy stock at a discount. Generally, it's through payroll deduction. You say what percent. And there's limits on that, but there's a limit on how much you can do, and you do it through payroll deduction. It builds up in a little account, and once it builds up enough, maybe every quarter, the employer will buy the employer stock for you in this employee stock purchase plan at this discount. Now, the discount, the difference between the discount and the fair market value when you purchase it is included in your wages as ordinary income, but any... let me see if I said that right. The discount between the, I think I'm misspeaking, but if there is some gain on that employee stock purchase plan, then that would be long-term capital gain. But the discount itself, the 15% from when they grant you that option, is going to be ordinary income. We don't see these too often, but it is something to be aware of. It could be a nice opportunity for people to get some stock at a discount. So the discount portion is what's included in ordinary income if sold, when it's sold, and any gain would be treated as long-term. We also see more and more the term RSUs, restricted stock units. Back in the day when I first started in the business, we'd see incentive stock options. Then along came alternative minimum tax. More people were subject to it, and incentive stock options kind of went by the wayside, plus the accounting for them were quite burdensome. And there was a whole Enron scandal, and incentive stock options just kind of, we don't see as many, or I haven't seen them in a long time. It's more these restricted stock units, which is really given in kind of in lieu of compensation, but incentivizing people to stay. And it's usually a 3-year vesting period. So they say, hey, if you stay with us, we're going to give you $10,000 of stock in 3 years if you're still with us. So you stay 3 years and then you get $10,000 worth of stock. There, it is included as ordinary income on your tax return, but then you can take the stock or sell the stock to pay the taxes on it and take the cash difference. So you'll have some options on restricted stock units. So we are seeing more of that. Folks, I know I talked fast tonight. There's a lot to cover, but, you know, I always seem to shortchange the poor little retirement account. So I thought I wanted to give it its due today. Next week, we are going to have a pre-recorded show. I will not be here. I'm taking a break after tax season. And then the following week, May 26th, Rod Young, CPA and CFP professional, and Jackie Cornelius, EA, enrolled agent and CFP professional, will be here to discuss pensions. Lots of information around pensions, because more and more people are being given the option to take out a lump sum amount, which we roll over typically to an IRA, versus taking that monthly pension. And there is a lot to consider in that decision. Interest rates, cash flow, providing for heirs, all kinds of things. So hopefully Jackie and Rod will talk about that in 2 weeks. That's May 26th. It'll be a great show. I want to thank our listeners. Thank you, Carolyn, for calling in. Thank you, Lori, for being here, and Shondi. Coming up next, we have In the Tradition with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.